Hey, you're listening to Block Thinking with Werner Puchert.
Thank you for downloading the latest episode of Block Thinking. This week I experiment again and would love your feedback. I interview Michel Kloosterman, who is originally from the Netherlands. He's part of the Master Trainers Association for LEGO Serious Play, and what connects him with our region is the fact that he travels to Central Europe quite often to train people up in the method. As designers, we use a lot of methods and tools. I mean, I just have to peer over to my bookshelves to see all the things that I have to kind of keep in mind or apply on a day-to-day basis, from sprint design, business model canvas, to design thinking. And I thought it might be interesting to corner a few of these people who actually go around the globe training people up on these methods. Recently, I was lucky enough to get certified right here in Warsaw. I thought it was a good idea to actually sit down with Michel and talk about the method. So in this week's show, we deep dive in the LEGO Serious Play method, where it started, how it's applied, and what it actually means for business. And I really hope you find this interesting. So before we dive into the show, I've got another announcement and a special offer for you. A good mate of mine, Andy Wojnarowski, recently launched his own design thinking masterclass on the Udemy platform. Now, he's been gracious enough to give me a few discount codes to go check out the course. And I would love to give you one of those codes. So if you're interested in this topic and want to get a bit of a discount on a cool Udemy course, head over to Udemy, find the design thinking masterclass by Andy Wojnarowski, and enter the special discount code Block Thinking. So it's BLOC Thinking, one word, and you'll get a special discount on the course. And he would love your feedback. So head on over, check it out, and let him know what you think. Now, let's grab our bricks, talk about ducks, get into the flow, and here without further ado is Michel Kloosterman.
My name is Michel Kloosterman. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm working a lot with the LEGO Serious Play methods in the last 10 years. But gladly, I did a little bit more stuff before that, which was actually really in the beginning of my career. I became a historian. But later on, I focused a little bit more on business and business development, works in the HR area. I was a consultant and also a head of a department for 5 years. After that, worked around as a coach and a trainer, but certainly also had a lot of pleasure in teaching. Did that on some high schools, some applied universities. And then 10 years back, I started my own business and actually quite at the beginning, got to know LEGO Serious Play and really start developing it, which took time. But now, 10 years later, it is actually almost everything I do, or at least it is, the method is involved in what I do. And I deliver workshops and trainings and a bit of a coaching around Europe.
Michel, what is your value proposition? And what we mean by this is, why should clients work with you? Why should we go for training with you? What is that thing that makes Michel special?
Well, there's always a moment of silence, I think, when people are asked this question, which could have something to do with cultural habits about talking about yourself, etc. But on the other hand, what aligns me with other people and makes me is that what I at least try is I really try to be engaged, really try to understand what their issue is and try to engage in that. The things we discuss, the thing people discuss in the workshops, but also with clients, absolutely one of the things that I'm keen about is, and also on my website, is that trustworthiness of me.
Integrity and trust is super important for you.
Absolutely.
And I think this method, what we're going to discuss next, is like really tries to tap into that as a group dynamic.
Yeah.
The LEGO Serious Play method. Where did you and how did you get involved with these wonderful little blocks?
Well, that's the cool story I also share when I opened my trainings. I was invited by a real lovely lady from Denmark who we met on a business trip. And she invited us as tourists to see Copenhagen. And actually, one of the things she organized for us was a little workshop inside a business building where there were bricks on the table, and there was a guy in the room, and there were some other people. And she said, we're going to do a little workshop, which is called Working with the LEGO Serious Play Methods. At that moment, I was a little bit disappointed in terms of being a tourist and then have to play with LEGO bricks. But after 2 hours, I was really surprised of what happened. Of course, we built the lovely models, etc. But also the real thing that surprised me was that I shared some insights of me and my business and what I wanted to achieve with people I had never met before, and probably would also not have shared with them if it weren't for those bricks. And that was really what caught me in that moment. And the journey really started with organizing the first training in the Netherlands, getting trained myself.
Yes, that's amazing how one small little moment can change one's business and life.
It is surprising, isn't it? It is.
I found this really nice quote. This play helps uncover things you didn't know you knew, which is really interesting. And people are focusing on how games and these interactions can change the way we do work. Now, Lego Serious Play, where did it come from? What is the origin of this?
Well, it comes from actually a question that was a kind of asked within the Lego company itself at the time that things were now not going that well with Lego, which is about 15, 20 years ago now, where actually the CEO wanted to develop another way of looking at strategy and invited a couple of people in a kind of his own project to start thinking about other ways of developing strategy. Of course, there were some professors involved who brought their theories and insights and research on strategy. And there was someone from the Lego company itself, from Lego Education actually involved, Robert Rasmussen. And they started a kind of a process of trial and error, where actually Robert brought the brick to the table in terms of when we talk about strategy and when you want to have me involved, then I'm about Lego and I'm about brick, so I'm going to bring the brick to the table. And there the process started of developing something, which later was named the Lego Serious Play method. And so it actually comes from a need within the Lego company and then from a process of trying, researching, developing, and actually Robert put in quite a lot of effort at the end to really make it work in terms of techniques we use, in terms of the steps it takes to develop a workshop.
Michel, from your perspective, why do you think play or the act of playing is so important?
Yes, there are a couple of things. One is the fun and the joyfulness, a kind of the loosen up things. But of course, we call it serious play. It is about real topics, meaning that the questions we ask are about issues, group issues, challenges or problems, whatever you want to call it, real business issues. The play thing, when you look at play and when we think about children, is that although there are different people or different children playing, they all play together. Meaning for adults that we have to facilitate that process a little bit with making it interactive, making it also a kind of fun that you exchange insights, work together. The socially interactive stuff is therefore very important. And with play, it is that you are kind of, when you're playing around, you lose awareness of your environment, of time. And if you can combine that with the serious things that are going on in the business or in the group, then you actually have serious fun. So that is the challenge for us as facilitators, where the bricks and, of course, the methods are the things that help you facilitate that process to make that process work. Actually, you have to keep an eye on those elements of play, which create an awareness as if things are going by itself.
You mentioned when we spoke before that there's the term called hard fun.
Yeah.
Tapping into the positive aspects of play, but still unlock insights aligned with business. It's not just a bunch of adults in a room having fun.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It is indeed that hard part, that serious part.
Inevitably, you could uncover some really tough questions or come to some conclusions or insights that you're not really prepared to or didn't expect.
Absolutely. In terms of hard that it is. Sometimes really challenging and very close to letting go of the play element that makes it serious work.
Is the Lego company still, how do they fit into the LSP or the Lego Serious Play story? What is the role of the brand at the moment as it stands now?
Well, that's actually also a tough question. Like I said, in the beginning, they absolutely were involved and the CEO itself initiated the process. The people who were involved in developing the process, they in the beginning were employees of the Lego company. They then stepped out of that process. If we look at what it is now. The name Lego is still in the Lego serious play method. So there is actually a little bit of involvement, which is most related to the brand and to the fact that they keep an eye on the method in terms that it is not misused. And it's not only the brand, but actually the method itself also. Are they now formally engaged that there is a kind of a committee or a board or something like that? No. We and other people also, some are aligned, in a bit informal, but aligned with the Lego company. And of course, they're actually very involved. We need bricks to do this. Yeah. They still make special kits for us that are designed for this method, and that actually involves them very much because we need those bricks to deliver our workshops.
Of course, there's a little bit of business there, right?
Yeah.
I think the first thing that you assume if you just read up is like, we're just going to smash a few random blocks together. I'll break up some of my kids' blocks and then go have a meeting with people. These sets are specific to Lego Serious Play and you get them from Lego, right?
Yes, absolutely. And at the time when the method was developed, they actually looked at those bricks to see what fits in those sets and which of the bricks are that good to use. So that I would have liked to be there, yeah, to see the discussion about the different bricks. It probably would have been a lot of fun. But they actually indeed picked the different bricks so we can actually use different bricks and the meaning of those bricks in our workshops in terms of metaphors and metaphorically using those bricks to create our stories.
I'm going to tap a little bit into the method. Of course, if someone wants more detail about the method, I think they need to contact you for training, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, or you for a workshop.
Exactly. Here's another quote I found, and I think it sums up a little bit of the stuff that you shared with us. If Lego is about anything, it's the use of one's hands while the mind is in an unplugged state. Now, this undertone of Lego Serious Play is the idea of flow. Can you elaborate a little bit around the flow theory and why that is so important?
Yeah. So the flow theory from that really lovely Hungarian guy, which is always hard to pronounce his name.
Yeah, I was leaving that up to you.
thank you for that again. But I will try again. So the guy is called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, or very close to this. He wrote a fantastic book and articles, and actually people interested in that also can just look on YouTube for a lovely TED talk of him. Why is it of that importance? What we do in the training and in the workshops is that flow is a kind of a balance where people, on the one hand, feel at ease in terms of that they really can go into that play mode. But on the other hand, also the flow theory says that you have to get in a little bit of disruption. So that balance between giving them a challenge, giving them something that is not the obvious, but also creating that feeling that they can actually achieve an insight or achieve an answer, that is where you get them into flow. And that makes people aware that they got lost a little bit in time and the presence of things and actually create an insight they didn't expect. Now, if you achieve that, then you have flow. And that is actually something that keeps us going in our Lego Serious Play workshops.
You actually have no idea the time you spent. It feels like 10 minutes, but you might have been busy for an hour.
Yeah.
When do you use the method for business? Like, what kind of business problems can be addressed by the method?
I could almost make the remark which business problem can't be addressed. But actually, indeed, when they start developing the method, one of the kind of conditions, a kind of the things they got from the CEO was that actually whatever they wanted to develop or start developing, that should be feasible for every layer in the organization. Dynamics of a group and communications, business planning, aligning with other parts of the businesses, making sure that you collaborate and cooperate with other parts of the businesses on a horizontal level, and then actually the system, the strategic level, where you talk about business plans, about strategy, vision, mission, marketing, how do it involve the outside world. So my remark there would be that it's more about the facilitator and his or her alignment with specific areas to develop a good workshop with the right questions you need to pay attention to, instead of, is there something that you actually can't do? I actually know from facilitators that they do, and just to mention it, probably completely unexpected, that they do marriage counseling with Lego Serious Play. So that's something different.
Now, Michel, I would like to know why you believe in this method. Why does it work?
Why do I believe that it actually helps clients? I see taking them on that little journey and getting them involved in the method, making them aware that they actually themselves can create insights, that they actually themselves can get a step closer to a solution. That is why this works, because you give people in a playful way the responsibility, the insights that they can contribute themselves to solving or getting closer to solving a real difficult issue. They tell it themselves as an individual and as a group responsible or being involved in that issue. And that's the strong thing about the method. And that's, of course, the challenge for the facilitator to make that work.
Exactly. And now, Michelle, I'm going to try and test my memory, because let's see if I can pass this test with you, because there's four core steps. And the first one is to set the challenge. So that's what the facilitator does. Then the second step is that everybody bowls. The third step is that you explain the model. And then the fourth step is reflection of that. Still, people might be under a misinterpretation that it's just putting a workshop together with a predefined set of Lego bricks. Can you explain a little bit around the application techniques that are built into the Lego Serious Play method?
There are seven in total. You can actually distinguish three levels. One of them is that we use the bricks, get into a kind of the individual level of exchanging insights, of asking questions to other people on an individual level. Then as people and in business, we need to achieve things together. So there's also the moment where you as a group combine your insights and make other people, clients or your manager or whoever understand what you achieve as a group. That is then the second level in the middle, because there is a third level. We know that, of course, from management and business is really that system level, that thing that is owned by nobody and by everybody. The complexity of your team or your business or actually the organization itself, and also sometimes the surrounding world. So that actually becomes complex and hard to understand, but fantastic when you see it on the table. And seven techniques apply to those three levels. Now we work with them and make people clear and understand on which of those three levels they work on at that moment.
It starts off with a very personalized interpretation that you turn into a metaphor, right? But then you can extend it depending on the challenge that is at hand, that you can actually extend it into something that is, I mean, the only way I could describe it, it's like a simulation, in fact.
Absolutely. You know from your experience that people are really surprised by how it kind of becomes alive, in terms of that I really not only see it, but I experience really what scenarios or what events actually can do to people or teams or organizations.
When do I know that the Lego Serious Play method is maybe a good fit for this client or for my business?
I know quite a couple of examples, and also people who use the blocks, for instance, within lean management processes, exactly, where they actually try to build that process and see where improvements can be made. And then you use the Lego bricks, not the Lego Serious Play method, but the Lego bricks to get improvements. Back to your question, when you want to validate your decision, which is already being made, then this is not the right method to do that. But the moment you're actually starting to want to getting people involved and actually making sure that it becomes a shared responsibility to get closer to things, then I think the proposal of let's try to fix this, or at least let's try to get closer to an insight or an answer to the problem, that actually can be done with Lego Serious Play.
In the workshop, there's an element called skills building that you've warned us many a time. Do not skip that, because that kind of allows people to get into the process before you start dipping into the more harder questions around what the business needs to achieve, right? One of these exercises involves a little small Lego duck, the infamous duck. I've been walking around with one of these ducks now for the last month or so. And every time I meet someone new, I actually give them the blocks. I break up and I give them and say, listen, please build me a duck. But there's no wrong duck or right duck. You just need to build your duck. And I have yet to find someone build the same duck. And I think just in that small little insight, it shows the power of the method, because we all understand the word duck, but our interpretation and the metaphor we build around that word is completely different from human to human.
That is absolutely the great insight from that exercise. And it every time, it's exactly like you said, it surprises people because they don't expect that. And it's so powerful. Only those six bricks you use to build a duck. Great.
While you have on the one extreme people super excited about seeing the blocks, that there is from time to time people who either don't take it seriously that you have to deal with, or there are actually people who are genuinely a little bit stressed out about handling these little blocks.
It happens. Gladly, I think 99.99% of the people, they have good memories about those blocks. There are people who are skeptical and they don't see it immediately. I just let them wait and see, okay, you can stay in the group, no problem. Just see what the other ones do and let's discuss that in a half an hour. And actually, most of them then get involved because they see what happens with other people. They just needed a little bit more time to get attached. And that's fine. You know, that's for me, that is fine. There is, of course, not only the good story. And I actually had one time someone who I couldn't involve. And whatever I did and tried, and he tried also very hard, but it didn't work for him. And that is maybe the exception to the rule, but it happens also.
There's a quote that I found that one of the facilitators used, is that the moment of awakening came when the quietest member of the team shared some of the most valuable insights that day. And I think this is also something that's really powerful of the method. And like you mentioned before, part of the validity of using the method is that the owner, the manager, or your client, he knows or he feels that the answers that he seeks is in the room, is in his team. It's somewhere there locked up. Is it true that the LEGO Serious Play focus on unlocking the collective knowledge of a group?
You mentioned it and it brought me back to a workshop I did, what was it, six, seven years ago. In this case, a guy in the room, a kind of smaller guy, and you could easily miss him. They were solving issues in terms of their development, the chances as employees they had to face because things were really changing in the company, their jobs were changing, it became a kind of personal. And that little man created in one of the exercises a bridge to another world, to the outside world, where new things were happening, where new ideas could evolve, where a kind of new perspectives came into place. And building that bridge made people aware of, wow, we are just focusing on all the old stuff. And instead of doing that, we should build a bridge to new perspectives where new possibilities arise, where we create new awarenesses. And the simple element, when you mention it, the simple element of building the bridge, but in the moment of that workshop, was the metaphor was like the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, something like that. That changed absolutely the whole setting in the group. And that comes back to your question in terms of, does it create awareness in the collectiveness? Yes, it can absolutely do that.
And it also gives a voice to the quiet guy, to the lonely guy.
Yeah. Thank you for remembering, making me remember this moment again.
It's super powerful. And there's more than lonely guys and teams, of course, but what helps the team have the conversation is that it's always about the model.
Yeah, and that's very strong in the method itself also. It's always about the model. So that's, of course, also very powerful, is that when other people have an insight or a comment or a question, they direct the question to the model and not to the person. And that helps really to improve the communication between people because you actually can see what you're talking about.
And a bit of a lighthearted note, as an owner of a model, you cannot talk of things that are not in the model. So it quiets the waffling, right?
You're spot on that. And that so much improves the conversation, the understanding of each other, the listening to each other. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to agree with what is in the model, but you actually can see where it's coming from and how it's been clarified. And that makes you understand a little bit more about positions or whatever it is from other people.
Yeah, it's a great tool to counteract. I think you mentioned unusual meetings. There's one person who runs 80% of the meeting, right? And then just back to the another insight that I wanted to touch upon that I personally found very interesting in the method. At some stage, people get together to build a shared model. It starts off from individual models where you build a collective model where everybody builds something together. And the first thing that you instinctively do is to say, let's look at what's common in each model and then build our collective model from what is common. But you quickly pointed out something really interesting. Can you elaborate on that?
When asked to give insights on the topic in their individual model, your participants bring so much good insights from their personal perspective, from their individual perspective. And when you're looking at only what's common, what's the same, that means that you're losing or letting go of a lot of other probably very original insights. It also means that you're only looking for the things that you already knew because they are common, they are the same. If you go beyond what is the same, you go also beyond where you always have solved the problem in the past. But that's, of course, the other topic. You ask your participants that they create and use all their insights and knowledge to create insights on that issue. And that's fantastic. And people feel engaged and they feel recognized. If then the next exercise is thank you for your efforts, but we're only going to use that specific part, which all the other people also have. A kind of people feel, why did you ask me? Because you were only looking for the things we already knew. And so in terms of getting involved, in terms of creating new awareness, in terms of making me responsible of things, meaning that looking for a way to create what we call then a shared model also makes people feel that, hey, I'm actually part of this solution and I actually want to take my responsibility in this to make this work. Now, my last remark in that is, and that's just for the people who listen to this, is that shared model is not just a pile of bricks put together. And you know from your experience that actually a quite a deep and involved process of negotiating, of putting things in the right place, of making clear that everybody understands the relationships and the way the things are built and organized in the model. So it indeed represents the important and not so important, the valuable and not so valuable aspects that need to be in the shared model. And of course, there are things left out, but that is then a group decision and not an individual decision.
The Block Thinking Podcast is brought to you with the support of Seed Cards, an inspirational creative tool for experience design. About 80% of companies worldwide think they are customer-centric. Only 8% of their customers agree. Get inspired by the best customer experiences from leading brands such as Disney, Netflix, and Southwest Airlines. Seed Cards will challenge you and your team to break with convention. They will encourage you to develop ideas that will resonate with your customers in a meaningful way. Visit www.seedcards.com or www.seedcards.pl to download a free sample. Get inspired to create unique experiences for your customers.
So hey guys, we've got a special offer for you. For listeners of the Block Thinking Podcast, we have a special 10% discount on the Polish and English versions of Seed Cards. All you have to do is go to kajetetrenera.pl and use the promo code BLOCKTHINKING. That is BLOC space thinking, and you'll get 10% discount on your purchase. Now, let's get back to the show. My consultant heart can't help but ask, how do you do the feedback, the documentation without breaking flow? And how do you do that to make sure that the stakeholder still gets the nuggets that they want out of the workshop? And how do you carry then that insights into momentum for the business? I mean, they need to reference something to, you know, from a week ago's workshop. How do you document these actions?
My responsibility in general as a facilitator is to make sure that they have all the insights and the tools. One of the things we do, we capture them in a video, keeping it visual. And then the very strong is to make a script out of that video. Of course, pictures help then also in combination. What we also do, and definitely in workshops, is make sure that at the end, it comes to a kind of an inside action points, top 3, 5, or whatever you need to make it work. We use the bricks for that, But we also then make sure that we put a post-it on it or a small remark on it and capture that action step and bring that to the organization with ideas, with maybe a mind map. Sometimes we use mind maps just to align people on terms of what is the topic, what are the action points, and what are the actual actions that have to be taken to make sure that this is being implemented. And then, of course, when people really have a good day, can we actually bring those models or that specific item? Can we take that away? Yeah. And that's fun. Then they just take the model to their office. And actually, the next time in a couple of weeks when I go visit them, and then actually the Lego bricks and the model is still there. Yeah, that's so cool.
What is the biggest group of people that you ever were involved with doing the method in one go?
We all say when we, as a facilitator, really want to facilitate closely the process, those four steps you mentioned, then it is 12. 12 is a kind of really the maximum you can facilitate, but also, of course, for the participants itself. Now, listen to 11 other stories is a kind of really the max you can take. But of course, it is possible sometimes to do bigger groups. The dynamics are, of course, different. The preparation is different. Maybe sometimes also the intensity of being involved can be a little bit different. The ones I did really on my own, so me only being a facilitator in the room, was a group of about 100 people. Actually, with the assistance of a couple of other people, or actually, in this case, I have to say, I was invited in that workshop to help facilitate that process. And we did that with six in total. And that was actually a group of 500 people, which was a huge event, but also a very successful and dynamic event. Mm,
100 people. I need to buy more ducks.
Don't sell them. Don't sell them.
We've spoken about models, we have spoken about method, but there's one key thing that comes with experience, and that is asking the right questions. And I think that is probably the toughest part of this method, because it's not just about go build a duck, you have 1 minute. It is really about asking the question that's going to leave people open-ended enough to unlock their insights, but then also close enough to give them comfort that they're moving in the right direction.
Yes, that is the job of the facilitator. And every time I prepare a workshop and I have the question, or I think I have the question, then actually immediately comes to mind, is this now really giving them an insight on the problem? And what was again the problem? So preparing a workshop, of course, starts with me with the conversation with the clients, and going back home and think about it and preparing and crafting. Is that word in the end of the sentence, or should I put it in the beginning of the sentence? And what is the dynamic of that? If I think I have, just go back to the client again and ask him, is this really the topic that we're addressing? You have to love it a little bit, but it is indeed important, because you can only ask the question to your participants in your workshop once.
So you are the crafter of good questions in the end.
In the end, yes.
Is there maybe an example or any case study or something that you could share with us?
Yeah, of course. I like myself doing things, for instance, on team development. So I had once a group of project managers. They all had their own projects, and sometimes they had to work together, but also just doing their job with their client and their project. So actually the manager of that group said, hey, but we have to align a little bit more. But also, of course, there is an insight of we can learn from each other's experience and how do we organize that stuff. So I did a really nice workshop with them and making sure that, but then there was also a really nice and also a bit awkward moment. During the workshop, I asked them to whom they like to align in terms of colleagues. They build what we call connections. So they visualize the relationship that they have with another person. When that was finished after a couple of minutes, what happened on the table is that they all aligned to one person. All. No exception. All. And that was an insight nobody expected. And that wasn't the manager. So that was an experience. And when I see the manager, we sometimes still talk about that particular moment, what happened in that moment, that they became aware of the fact that person was crucial for all their operations. Therefore, they were also very vulnerable. But that awareness was a fantastic moment. And like I said, we sometimes still talk about it.
I know you're also involved with the Master Trainers Association. And I'm sneaking this question in. Is there an evolution happening? Do you guys look at the LEGO Serious Play method? Are you looking at evolving it at any stage? Is there changes, or are you happy with the foundation of the method as it is?
Yes and yes is the answer to your question. Meaning that indeed, we like to call it also a very robust methods. We don't add or change a lot of stuff every half year. But of course, it evolves also from the insides, which are maybe sometimes minor details. Sometimes things need to be clarified a little bit, but it doesn't change that rapidly. There are now 7 techniques. I'm not aware of a discussion that we maybe should add an 8th technique or something like that. But we definitely, for instance, updated the manual quite significantly 2 years ago. But it is robust. It is there. And that's a good thing.
It's like the constitution, right? Yeah, you don't change the constitution.
Indeed. But then, of course, there is the challenge of can you, for instance, combine things? Or make applications in a specific area where you put the method forward. And for instance, I already mentioned the business model canvas, apply it in that specific area. I, with a friend, developed design thinking with LEGO Serious Play.
Can you tell us a little something about your secret?
Yeah, I have to mention my colleague, Arjan Visser. So we both developed LEGO Serious Play with design thinking. Our challenge was the design thinking process. That is a process that is well described. People who are in that area, they know the double diamond model. So our challenge was, can we do those steps of design thinking all with LEGO Serious Play? And there were some people saying, no, you can't. And that was the challenge we took up. And we developed and designed actually that we can do all the steps, the prototyping, the ideation phase, all the steps with LEGO Serious Play, also getting the customer insights on the table, etc. So our design thinking process with LEGO Serious Play now captures 7 steps, really coming from what is the challenge that is facing us to what are the conditions to make it a successful implementation into the organization involved with the method of LEGO Serious Play. So that challenge is absolutely something we have as an association. And the challenge in this is not so much of whatever we can think of, we're going to apply, but don't make it just playing with bricks, but still do it with the method itself. And that is a very interesting discussion to have. And yes, I think it's possible. And yes, I am doing some work myself in that area. And I know some colleagues are also doing work in their area where they're good at.
Story time.
Just to lighten things up a little bit. And also, unfortunately, because you're on my podcast, we have this tradition that we call it the story challenge. And I have them in front of me, so you have to trust me. I am South African. so it's actually, storytelling is really important in LEGO Serious Play as well, and your ability to tell your story with your hands. But then also in user experience design, storytelling is very important. Narrative is very important. So I want to test your ability, and it doesn't have to be related to LEGO. It doesn't have to be related to anything that is design. It could just be a story that you tell, and it doesn't have to be the truth either. So here's the challenge. Tell a story about a moment when you were proud.
I think of my children. One is my son, and he's still studying. The environment of that specific school wasn't typically maybe his environment, but he knew that he had to go through it to get to a point where he actually could choose his next step and therefore choose for the things that he really liked. And going through school almost 3 years where he really had to work hard to make it work for him, and then seeing him succeed, well, there you have proud. My daughter got married a year ago, and she asked me to bring her it was not the altar, but to the person and to her husband. And we actually had quite a long walk to the place where she actually got married. So we had a walk of maybe 2 or 3 minutes together. We had a lot of precious moments, but that is probably one of the most precious moments I had with her in my whole life. Yes.
That is a great story, Michel. Thanks for sharing that, and congratulations. You come to Poland regularly. Any thoughts on Warsaw? You take care of Central Europe in a way. Do you cover some of the other countries?
Back home, people ask me, okay, what is that city? Every time I say, you have to put it on your list of visiting cities when you do a short holiday, because it is actually a great city to visit. It's modern, you can shop, there's culture, there's history, there's lovely people, there's good food and fantastic restaurants. I did Bulgaria. I love to go to Hungary as well. Czech is on my list. Indeed, the Central Europe countries and the people who live there, because I do like them.
In your life, is there someone important that you maybe see as a mentor or someone who stands by your side that you value as someone who guides you?
Looking at the picture and a small statue of that guy, I'm very much inspired also by Walt Disney. The combination of him as a dreamer, but also a very tough leader. And now he was not so much a businessman, but certainly he was a leader and not an easy one. That is an inspiring combination. And inspiring.
Disney is still in the forefront of experience design. And a lot of people that I talk to, when we start discussing more deeper experience design things, Disney is still at the top of that list. So I can't agree with you more. So what is next for Michel?
I think there are two things on my list. One is that we talked a little bit about that. I really want to bring the methods forward in applying it in specific areas like design thinking. But we really want to go into storytelling in terms of branding, marketing, where I want to make the next development. And the other thing is that I really want to do a couple of things over the big ocean in the United States or in North America in general.
And then, Michel, if someone listening to this, they want to get hold of you, or they want to see what you're up to, or maybe get an understanding for the workshops that are available, what are the best platforms to follow you or connect with you?
The best platform for me is LinkedIn, where I both have my personal profile and also my company, Bricks and Business, is there, where I post a lot, where I can respond to people when they have questions or things like that. And of course, we can do that the same and add a little bit photos, etc., on Facebook. So that's the platforms where I can really be interactive. And if people just want to see what I'm doing and where I'm doing stuff, then there is, of course, my website, bricksandbusiness.com.
Yeah, I see smiling people. I see Bricks. Thanks again for coming to Warsaw to train a bunch of us up. But I hope you're going to come back so that we can have that beer we were talking
about. That's cool.
Great stuff, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Werner. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Block Thinking. You can find more information and the show notes for this episode at www.blockthinking.com. That is blockthinking without the K.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast platforms. We thrive on critique, so feel free to leave comments on iTunes or get hold of us directly. Thanks for listening.
That infamous duck. Now, as tempted as I was to steal one of your ducks, I did not do that. I went off to go and buy myself a duck. And I thought, maybe I should buy 8 of these ducks, because you never know, you might be able to use them in a workshop. And like you mentioned, as a single facilitator, you can't handle too many groups. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'll buy 8 ducks. Then I thought, maybe I should have a few spare ducks. And then I decided to buy 16 ducks.
All right.
In the process of buying these ducks, my iPad crashed. I forgot that I had stuff in the cart. Michel, I ended up with 58 ducks.
Okay.
So if you know of anybody who needs ducks, I'm your man.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. The duck is that popular. Oh, my God.